Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
Hard-hitting news. Alternative talk radio. Get ready, America, for Deadline Live with your host, Jack Blood. Deadline Live is a daily wrap-up for those too busy in the daily grind to discern and dissect the news. While the so-called mainstream media buries the truth, Jack Blood uncovers it, exposing the lies that our trusted government officials do not want us to know. And now, please welcome Jack Blood.
And welcome to you, another live original edition of Deadline Live coming your way this 8th day of December 2005. That's the 25th anniversary of the assassination of John Lennon. My name's Jack Blood. I'm your radio gun, tour guide, narrator for the next 2 hours. Of course, we're on the air Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Central Time at various times throughout the day. Genesis Communications Network. We'll be joined here in about 20 minutes by James Truth. He is the editor and publisher of Total411.info, Total911.info, and we will be discussing at length what really happened to John Lennon. Who was his killers? Or killer, as the case may be. And why, if John Lennon was assassinated, why would he be assassinated? What kind of evidence do we have? I got to tell you, there's a pretty good amount of at least circumstantial evidence here, definite evidence of a cover-up. So we're going to discuss that, and you may not think that's very important. You may think that there is other news that we should be pounding and discussing and breaking down and decoding, and we will do some of that as well in today's program. But I do think this is very important. Of course, I remember, like most of you who were old enough, where I was the day that John Lennon died. And it made it a profound impact on me, and I think that there's a lot of comparisons that can be made between Malcolm X and John Lennon, two guys who really started waking up at the end. No matter what they had put forth, what kind of paradigm they've been caught in most of their lives, at the end, in their final days, it appeared that they had indeed woken up to what we call here the New World Order, the real plan, the plan to pit us all against each other. So I think it is important. There's a lot to this. I know it will be fun and interesting to listen to. We'll also be joined by Mac White. I love Mac White. He's a good friend of mine here in Texas. His book, The Bush Junta, is a must-have. It is a cartoon illustrated format to find out what happened to the world through the Bush family, and we're going to recommend that very highly, MacWhite.com. He'll be joining us at 3 o'clock, so halfway through the program today. Again, the topic will be John Lennon. We'll be right back. More on this when we come back after this break. Stay tuned.
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100.
Temperature's rising.
Deadline Live, Genesis Communications Network, Jack Blood with you today. 25th anniversary of John Lennon's death. I think that's a pretty important marker in history. You know, I was a teenager when that happened. I remember where I was and really, like a lot of people, just completely in shock over it. It's taken me roughly 25 years to finally figure out what might have happened. And still, I think we have a long way to go. James Truth is with us. He's been on the program many times. Good friend of mine, editor and publisher of Total411.info, also the sister site to that, Total911.info, all 9/11 sites. But great websites, by the way. James, thanks for joining us today. I know you've been quite an expert on the Beatles as a whole over these years. We've had quite a lot of good conversations about it.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
It's good having you. Well, look... I think it's pretty easy to run down this story. It first of all, I guess, should we start with, you know, the state of mind of John Lennon? You know, there were a number of years there where between the time when he was an activist and between the time of his last record, Double Fantasy, where he didn't get out of bed for several years. And the information admitted by John Lennon himself is that he was kept as a heroin addict by Yoko all those years.
That seems to basically be it. He was having a very productive period in the, I guess, early to mid-70s. He was out in Los Angeles without Yoko, actually, and he had another lady friend, and he was recording songs with some of the former Beatles and some other folks. And but then one day, Yoko called and said she found a hypnotist that would help him quit smoking. And so he went, and then he just kind of disappeared for 5 years after that.
Yeah, I think the mainstream media tries to say that he was a stay-at-home dad. I'm not sure what they're covering up for there. I mean, they're perfectly willing to speculate on his homosexual relationships with his former manager, which is complete bunk in my opinion. But but this whole stay-at-home dad thing, I mean, really, it's admitted by John Lennon himself that he sat and looked at his big toe for 5 years, and his handler, let's just call her what it was Yoko Ono.
Yeah, she was his handler, and you know, there are different interpretations you can put on that. Most people, of course, think that she was a handler in a malicious way, but you might say that she knew that he was just so potent that if he started talking, he would get killed, and so she had to keep him quiet.
And, I'm not sure I'm going to buy that one.
Yeah,
James. It's an interesting angle, I got to tell you. But you know what happened there at the end was John Lennon took a cruise, took a sailboat ride down to the Caribbean, got off of drugs and became completely inspired. Wrote a double album.
Yeah.
And so he calls back. You know, he's reporting back to Yoko, who's still in New York, and he says, "Look, honey, listen to some of this music. I've written this great music." She says, "No. No, I'm going to rewrite most of these lyrics, and I'm going to change this because this is going to be my double album."
Yeah, exactly. He was down in Bermuda, away from Yoko. He was down there with his son, and actually, I think he took some psychedelic mushrooms that helped him get off the heroin, and he started getting more creative. And yeah, he really wanted to do a record, and she was saying no, and then she insisted on being on half of the record, and then you know, just all this happened, and it's.
He was so conditioned that he pretty much did whatever she said at that point.
Yeah, even when he would kind of get independent, he kind of would still kind of buckle to her will. And
she was having an affair all of this time. In fact, I think she had a lot of affairs. And I'm not, you know, here to do a show on bashing Yoko, but we've really got to kind of set the record straight. You know, she was controlling John to the point where, you know, as good as that album was, I wonder how much better it would have been if she would have kept her nose out of it. But at the same time, she's having an affair. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of parallels, James. I'm sure you realize this with the Courtney Love Kurt Cobain relationship and Lennon Yoko, where, you know, Lennon was maybe thinking about divorcing her. They were having major marital problems. The love, I think, had largely left that relationship, and she had a lot to lose if Lennon stayed alive. So I would think, minimally, she's got to be one of the suspects in this assassination.
Yeah, well, I mean, I definitely think she knew something was coming. In fact, it's interesting that you bring up the Kurt Cobain situation, because I think you're more of an expert on that than I am, but hasn't David Geffen's name come up in relation to Kurt Cobain?
Well, I mean, they stood to gain a lot of money. I mean, it's the same thing with John Lennon.
Yeah,
you're going to sell a lot more records with a dead rock star than a live rock star.
Yeah, I was reading actually. If you look in the lives of John Lennon, which is a big muckraking book by a reporter called Albert Goldman, apparently he says in there that soon before John died that Yoko and Geffen each bought a big life insurance policy on John.
Right. And Geffen, so, David Geffen is a major player with, I guess, what we'll call the globalists and New World Order. I mean, you don't become a billionaire in the entertainment business unless you're playing the game, so to speak. But I think that's one of the angles. Well, let's ask this question, James.
Mm-hmm.
Why, after 25 years, is this so important? I mean, Lennon, wasn't he just a musician? I guess some people would put him to the cultural icon status. But why is this more important than, say, you know, discussing terrorism today?
Well, it's important for a number of reasons. As we've discussed on the show before, one statement that Lennon made in the 60s that got him in a lot of trouble was when he said that the Beatles are more popular than Jesus Christ. And he said that because in a large way it was true. In the Western world, the youth of the Western world anyway, what they said and what they did carried a huge amount of weight. And of course, a lot of people, and I tend to agree, would say that to some degree that was kind of set up by the powers that be. But the thing is, once they were in this position, they did have that influence. And after Lennon had been quiet for so many years, you know, him speaking out again for peace and against war and all this could have been very dangerous to the incoming Bush-Reagan administration.
Well, and the fact was is that the establishment lived in fear of John Lennon for some reason.
Yeah, and the other reason why it's important is because a lot of the players that seem to be implicated and who really killed Lennon are still around today.
Do you have any... I've seen some information on this. I don't know what you have, James. Do you have any information that, you know, I mean, it appeared to me that Lennon, for the most part, was pretty much a leftist. Some could even say a socialist or a communist if you look at some of his lyrics. And, you know, in the end, I'd heard that, you know, he was using terms like New World Order. He was, I think he did, again, I make the comparison to Malcolm X, who, you know, it seemed just before his assassination, kind of woke up and realized that he was forced into a false paradigm and leading other people down that same road. And it at least appears to me on face value that Lennon started waking up there at the end.
Well, I don't know if he used the term New World Order, but there are interesting things. Before he went into the hibernation phase, one of the songs he recorded was Bring On the Lucy, reference to Lucifer, and it was basically a song about fighting the Luciferians and 666 is
the name. That's right.
And all this stuff, and then he went into hibernation.
We have Mac White joining us in the second hour who can elaborate on that. Well, we're going to get into this conspiracy right when we come back. You're listening to Deadline Live, GCN, James Truth with us from Total411.info. Stay tuned.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is
only John Lennon, the communist, would write a song about Christmas. Doesn't he know it's the holiday It's not a happy Christmas. It's happy holidays. No, actually, folks, we're going to set a precedent here on this program. There's been a lot of wasted talk on this on cable news stations. So, James, maybe you'll agree. I'd like to change it, not holidays and not Christmas, but we'll take a page out of the Elvis Presley book, and we'll call it Krimis from now on. So, Merry Krimis to everybody.
Oh, yeah. Merry.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Happy Christmas war is over, right?
Well... See, that's one of the things, because as you mentioned, when we're talking about John Lennon, and by the way, we're with James Truth, a good friend of mine from Virginia, total411.info, total911.info, we're talking about John Lennon, and you know that, you know, the Reagan administration is about to take a hold, and there's going to be a lot of war, and there's going to be a lot of controversy, and certainly you don't want John Lennon around mucking things up.
No, you don't. And it's funny you say the Reagan administration, because it might be more accurate to call it the Bush administration.
Sure,
and,
I do.
And that's because there are so many parallels between the assassination of John Lennon and the attempted assassination on Ronald Reagan, which came just 3 months later.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's break this down for people. There's really a lot to it, and I hope we get to most of it on the program. But December 8, 1980, 10:50 p.m., again, just 1 month after Ronald Reagan was elected president, John Lennon was assassinated. He was gunned down in front of the Dakota in New York City. Now, you know, of course, everyone, you have the perfect patsy. You have a lone gunman reading Catcher in the Rye, conveniently enough. While the police are on their way, there was a subway, I believe, 60 feet away that he could have ducked into. But here is the guy that just does not fit into this scheme at all. His name is Jose Perdermo. Who was a Cuban nationalist, right?
It appears that way. This guy's name was Jose Perdomo, and he was the doorman, and so he was outside of he was outside of the Dakota the whole time this was happening, and Mark David Chapman comes up, and he just sat there all day. First he got Lennon to autograph a copy of the new album, and then he just kind of hung out there all day, and apparently behind the first gate to the building, because you know that there's a gate on the sidewalk, yeah. And then the building's back behind that. And this man, Perdomo, just let him hang out all day, and apparently they chatted about the Kennedy assassination, is what he says.
And they were talking about the Bay of Pigs and a number of issues going on in Cuba. I mean, this is the thing, James. I want to stop here for a second, because when you're looking at the Kennedy assassination, you're looking at... you know, the Nixon scandals, you're looking at the Bay of Pigs. I mean, there are a number of similarities here, and here it is in John Lennon. I mean, you know, of course, again, you mentioned the Bush presidency being the Reagan presidency. And these are all things that Bush was involved in. I'm not saying that Bush assassinated Lennon by any means here, but again, I mean, I think he was certainly in the loop. And what a strange coincidence that, you know, no matter what happened when we're talking about assassinations, it always kind of leads back to Cuba somehow.
Yeah, in this case, Jose Perdomo appears to be there. There was a Jose Perdomo who was involved in the Bay of Pigs assassination, invasion,
right.
and all these operations, particularly one called Operation 40, which was kind of a mini intelligence agency set up in South Florida for these Cuban operations, and you know, connected to people like.
But we don't know if it's the same Jose Perdomo or not.
There's a lot of evidence that indicates it probably was the same guy. The one problem would be was that one of his spy buddies, Frank Sturgis, who lots of people have connected to Watergate and all this, claimed in the mid-70s that Perdomo died. And so he went by different names. There was a name, Joaquin Sanyenas. His full name was Jose Joaquin Sanyenas Perdomo. And they kind of kept the name of this doorman quiet for many years. It wasn't mentioned in print until about 7 or 8 years later in People magazine.
Yeah.
And it's from there that people started making the connections, even though his name did appear, Jose Perdomo, his name, in fact, a photo, did appear on NBC a couple of weeks ago in a special about the assassination. So as far as Cuban exiles named Jose Perdomo go, I don't know if there were any other ones. So
right, but, there, here's the guy out front. He's talking to a John Lennon fan about heavy political issues. Of course, there's nothing strange to this guy about Chapman hanging around for... How long was he hanging out there waiting for Lennon from the time before the autograph until the actual shooting?
I would guess 12 hours or something like that. I think he got there early to mid-afternoon.
Yeah.
And then...
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, he just hung out in Lennon.
Right.
They went off to the studio, and it's very interesting. The song they were recording was for the next Yoko Lennon album, and Yoko was doing a song called Walking on Thin Ice. And so, you know, it seems to me that was a direct message to John. You're really putting yourself out there.
Well, Lennon, as we know, walked around New York without any security, which I always thought was kind of strange. They'd always tell us, well, that's how cool New York is that, you know, you can be famous and people won't bother you. But it seemed to me to be kind of odd almost, and not sure if that's the decision that he made. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this doorman, Jose Podermo. What are these inconsistencies? Why were there more bullet holes than shots fired? And why didn't Chapman attempt to get away? Stay tuned. Deadline Live.
Info.
You can Google that and bookmark it, because there's a lot of great news that comes out on that website. James, you guys have done an excellent job covering Hurricane Katrina. There's a lot of straight news on there, and you guys really, I think, add to the fray in a way that helps us all. You know, we're trying to break down this John Lennon assassination, and I'm just openly calling it an assassination because I've made my mind up, and we'll see what the rest of the audience thinks. We barely scratched the surface. We got a long way to go. You know, going back to Jose Podermo, I mean, maybe you're not as convinced as Jerry Mazza that it was the Jose Podermo, who was also Sam Genis and a number of other names, that really was tied to the anti-Castro Cuban and a member of Brigade 2506 during the Bay of Pigs. So at least Mazza's convinced of this. Maybe you're not, but Mazza seems to be.
I'm pretty convinced.
So we'll go
I'm
ahead and
diplomatic
take
diplomatic for the radio here, but
that's fine. No, we'll take that for granted at this point. So Lennon comes up, and Chapman's out there waiting, and we just got a couple of minutes here. Give us the rundown on what happened next.
Well, he waited outside for hours, and then Lennon came home that night, and Chapman was there, and someone shot him 5 times. And the interesting thing is that according to where Chapman was and where Podermo was, The shots did not come from where Chapman was. They came from the other side.
Well, two in the left shoulder, two in the upper left side of the back, and, of course, 3 bullet holes found in a glass lobby door. Was Podermo behind Lennon, or was he in front of him?
That's a good question. I I would guess he's
because we have some other
us.
Suspects as well.
Yeah.
And we're just going to focus on Podermo right now.
Yeah, some people have thought that they thought Yoko actually pulled the trigger there, but I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, that might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Lennon, wounded, ran some 20 feet from Chapman towards the lobby stairs, staggering past the front desk of the main lobby, fell face down in the concierge stand. Yoko, who had been preceded by John by some 40 feet, so she's not walking with John, she's 40 feet ahead of John.
Yeah.
Then screamed to the clerk to call police. John's been shot, and she ran to cradle his head. At that point, Chapman called out, "Mr. Lennon."
The other interesting thing, real here, before we run out of time on this segment, is after the shooting, Perdomo says to Chapman,
"Yeah,
do you know what you've just done?" And then Chapman answered, "I shot John Lennon," which is very strange exchange.
But he first said, "Leave, get out of here."
Yeah, he didn't want to stay. He wanted him to stay so he could get arrested and be the patsy.
Well, according to the records that I have, Podermo said, "Leave, get out of here." Then he asked Chapman, "Do you know what you've done?" And Chapman responded, "I just shot John Lennon."
Which to me sounds like, he's reinforcing it in Chapman's mind that he was the person who did it. There wasn't anyone else there.
And then at this point, Chapman threw down his gun, took off his coat, folded at his feet, calmly started reading the paperback Catcher in the Rye,
exactly.
While Perdomo kicked the gun away. And one wonders why Perdomo told him to leave after reminding him of his crime. And perhaps Perdomo was the shooter and planted the gun. I mean, these are some of the allegations. Again, the subway 60 feet away if Chapman wanted to get away. We're going to go back.
Yeah.
Mac White will be joining us here in the second hour. We'll stay with James Truth. And on this topic, you're listening to Deadline Live. We'll be right back after this.